Tonight's learning should be dedicated to Le'ilu Nishmas Rachna Bas Avram Yitzchak, as well as for Refuah Shleima for Chaim Yoshua Ben Hendel. Tonight we have the privilege of studying Parshas Vayetze. Parshas Vayetze is a jammed-packed parsha, like many of the parshas are in Sefer Bereishis. There's a lot of stories, a lot of lessons, a lot of messages that we need to take out from this week's parsha. So let's just talk a little bit of an overview of the parsha, and we'll try to get to as many pratim of the parsha as time allows. So the obviously overview of this week's parsha is Yaakov Avinu leaves his home. Yaakov goes away, travels, leaves the comfort of his parents' home and his community, and he travels for really two reasons. He travels for one reason for safety purposes, to get away from his brother who's looking to kill him. And the other reason why he travels is because he's destined to find the Shidduch. He travels now en route, with a journey, with a mission, to find the Shidduch, to find a wife for himself. That's one of the main ideas in this week's parasha. Then we know while he's en route, he has this very important dream where Hashem promises him that everything will be safe and everything will be okay. He then finally meets up with his future wife, Rachel, and then his future wife, Leah. And in this week's parasha is the beginning of the birth of the Shiftei Kah, the children of Yaakov Avinu, which we know today as the Shvatim. And then Yaakov begins business dealings with his father-in-law, which we'll talk about, working for his father-in-law for quite some time. And then Yaakov Avinu had enough. He is ready to leave Chutz Laaretz, leave Lavan, and take his family, his growing family, and move back with everyone back to Eretz Yisrael. And that's really the end of the parasha, where there's a confrontation between Yaakov and Lavan. Lavan feels gypped, and Yaakov tries to explain to him why he did what he did, and the whole story at the end of the parasha. And then Yaakov is basically now ends off the parasha en route to go back to Eretz Yisrael, to be back in Eretz HaKadosha. There's some other sub-stories. One famous story is the whole idea with the Dudaim, where Leah and Rachel swap out the Dudaim, these flowers that apparently was believed to have an ability to get pregnant, and Leah gives them to Rachel, and in a swap out, Rachel gives Yaakov to Leah that night, and Yaakov conceives, Leah gets pregnant and has Yisachar that night, which hopefully we'll talk about as well. But that's more of a smaller storyline in the parasha. But the basic storyline is, this is the week where Yaakov Avinu starts to build Klal Yisrael. This is the week where he goes out and finds not just one wife, but two wives, and maybe Bill and Zilpah as well, and he starts to begin the building of Shiftei Kah. But in order to understand the beginning of this week's parasha, and I know I say this every parasha here, but for sure in Sefer Bereishis, you got to go back to the end of Sefer Parshas Tolbos. You can't open up Parshas Vayetze if you're not well versed in what happens at the end of Parshas Tolbos. And if you go to the end of Parshas Tolbos, you'll notice something very interesting. At the end of Parshas Tolbos, Yaakov Avinu actually gets two different commandments from his two different parents. It's very often children, you know, parent one says one thing and the other parent says something else, and then the kid is trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do over here? So if you look at last week's parasha, you'll find that Yaakov is told one thing from his father and really one something else from his mother. If you look at the Pesukim, the Pesuk tells us that Yitzchak tells Yaakov, I want you to go to Padan Aram, I want you to go to Beis Psul Avimech, I want you to go to mom's family. Why? I want you to go there just for one reason. I want you to go there to have... One second. I want you to go there so you can get a wife. That's the reason I want you to go, according to Yitzchak. Yitzchak's wants and wishes, but you should go there. I just want to check my... One second. Okay, so Yaakov is going, according to Yitzchak's commandment was, I want you to go so you can go find the wife. But if you know, what did Rivka tell him? Rivka said, I want you to go because it's dangerous. I want you to go because I found out that Yaakov, Esav wants to kill you. And because Esav wants to kill you, now I want you to go to my brother's house and stay there and be protected. So he technically had really two separate commandments. He was going for this, he was going to the same place, but really for two different reasons. On one end, he was going to find the Shidduch. That's what his father wanted of him. And on the other end, he's going there because his mother wanted him to be safe. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky points out, there's a pasuk at the end of Parashas Toldos that seems interesting. The pasuk tells us, in Perek Chav Ches, pasuk Zayin, the pasuk says, Vayishma Yaakov el aviv ve'el imoy. And Yaakov listens to his father and his mother, and he goes to Padan Aram. So asks Reb Chaim Kanevsky, couldn't the pasuk just written by Yishma Yaakov El Aviv V'imoy? What's the second Ve'el? It says that Yaakov listened to his father and his mother. Why the second Ve'el Imoy? Says Reb Chaim Kanevsky, because his mother and his father gave him two different instructions. Dad's instruction was go to Padan Aram and find the Shidduch. Mom's instruction was go to Lavan and stay safe. They were mamish two separate jobs. So when Yaakov went, he went with both of them in mind as the fulfillment of both Kibbut Av and Kibbut Eim. He was doing both. He wasn't just going for mom or for dad, he was going for both of them. Mom wanted one thing, dad wanted something else. So therefore says the Beis HaLevi, beautiful. Says the Beis HaLevi, that's the opening line in this week's parsha. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, and he goes to Char. So everyone is bothered with who cares where he left from. The point is where he's going. So says the Beis HaLevi, when a person leaves point A, there's usually two things. One agenda is that you want to go to the new place. You have a reason to why you want to go to the new place. So you leave point A, so you can get to point B. Adina, I'm going to mute everyone right now. Okay, I got it. Okay, we muted everyone. So says the Beis HaLevi, when a person leaves point A, so sometimes you leave point A because you need to get to point B, and sometimes you leave point A because point A is no good. Says the Beis HaLevi, that's Pshat over here. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Yaakov left Be'er Sheva. Why? Because it was dangerous to be in Be'er Sheva, because Yaakov was going to kill him. That was his mother's wish. Vayelech Haran, he needed to be in Haran because that's where the Shidduch is going to be. That was his father's wish. So says the Beis HaLevi, there's really two parts of his leaving. One part was the fulfillment of, I can't stay here. It's dangerous to be here. Therefore, Vayetze Yaakov, I got to be out of here. And I could have went anywhere. I had to leave here. But the Vayelech Haran, the going to Haran, was specifically to fulfill his father's wishes. So there he can find a Shidduch. So explains the Beis HaLevi these two roles that Yaakov was trying to fulfill in route, leaving, and go. The other Mefarshim point out that if you go back to the end of Parashas told us, the end of Parashas told us is a very interesting story. The end of Parashas told us talks about Esav's marriages. End of Parashas told us tells us Vayar Esav ki rois benois kanan b'ini Yitzchak aviv. Esav saw that dad does not approve of marrying the benois kan, so Esav decides to take a wife from Yishmael. Okay. Then the Torah opens up Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. What does that have to do with anything? So Rashi makes the comment that it just seems like this was just like an interruption of last week's parasha. Last week's parasha was really focused about Yaakov and Yaakov's struggles and Yaakov's leaving. And then in the middle, the Torah tells us about Esav, and then we return back to hearing about Yaakov looking for a shidduch. But Reb Nissen Alpert has a beautiful pshat over here. Reb Nissen Alpert says no. Do you know what happened over here, says Reb Nissen Alpert? Yaakov knew that his brother's out to no good. But he figured he has time. What's the rush? But says in this and now, but the moment Yaakov saw that Esav's playing games, Esav's becoming a Frumma now. He's now marrying a girl from Esav, from Yishmael's family. He's not going to Canaan. So he says in this and now, but the moment Esav starts to become a Frumma or act Frum or fake Frum, Yaakov said, I got to get out of here. This is dangerous. This is the beginning of the end, because this is the way he's going to get me. So if it says in this and now, but that's the connection. Because Esav decided that he's going to start to act all Frum, or at least give off the facade of Frum kite, now Yaakov said to himself, I know he's up to no good. Now I know there's some ploy to try to get me or to attack me. I got to get out of here immediately. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. The Baal Turim points out that the smichas between the last week's parasha and this week's parasha is the words Loi Leisha and Vayetze Yaakov. Says the Baal Turim, the way you're supposed to read it is Vayetze Yaakov, you know why Yaakov left? Just Loi Leisha. Just to get a wife. Which is not like what we said from Reb Chaim Kanevsky in the Beis HaLevi. He said, you know, that the whole purpose was just Loi Leisha. The whole purpose of leaving was just to get a wife. Reb Yosef Salant pointed out that when you open up this pasuk of Vayetze Yaakov, Yaakov left, he's also assuming that Yaakov's major reason for traveling was for a shidduch. And he made the following observation. He said, if you think about it, Yaakov was no youngster now. He was single. His brother Esav, who is probably is not the better of the two catches, he already has a bunch of wives. So you can imagine that Yaakov is a little fatayned. Yaakov is a little upset. God, why do I have to travel to find the shidduch? Why can't I get a shidduch? Look at my brother. He's got wives from this country and wives from that country, and I got to go all the way out of, leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutzlars to find the shidduch. But Zezeb Yosef Salant, nonetheless, Yaakov went, Vayetze Yaakov, it means Yaakov left without any tainus. He wasn't fabittered, he wasn't fatayned. He went because that's what Hashem wants. So Matisyahu Salman pointed out, where do you see from the word Vayetze that he wasn't upset? So he writes, because it could have said the word Vayivrach, and he ran away. ran away gives off the connotation that you're upset at the situation. He went very peacefully. He went, this is my chapter, and my next chapter in life is to go to point A, to get a shidduch. And therefore Yaakov Avinu left with a simcha. He left with, this is what Hashem wants for me. This is what's best for me. This is the next stage in my life. Rebbe Elyo Meir Bloch, who helped found the Telzer Yeshiva today in Cleveland. So he was part of the Telzer Yeshiva back in Telz in Europe. Most of the Telzer Yeshiva was destroyed with the Rebbeim and with the Talmidim. But him, together with Reb Michael Katz, they came back to America. They came to America and they rebuilt Telzer Yeshiva. So when Rebbe Elyo Meir Bloch was safe in the Holocaust, so he came with the plan of rebuilding Telz. And he said that when he left Telz, it was Vayetze Mitelz. He said that was what Hashem wanted. Hashem wanted him to leave Telz and start a new institution. He wasn't fatayna, the why did I have to leave Europe and come? It wasn't I was forced. This is what Hashem wants. Hashem wanted me to leave Telz and come to America. He mamish made this analogy of Vayetze. He said it's like Vayetze Yaakov. Yaakov said, this is what Hashem wants. This is the next stage, the next phase of my life. For whatever reason, I don't know why, but this is what Hashem wants, and therefore I'm coming Vayetze. He said, I'm coming here now to rebuild Torah here in America. Rashi's bothered with the Kasha. Why is it important for us to know where he's leaving from? Vayetze Yaakov.
I lost it. I didn't have clear reception. Who did you say that story was with?
Rebbe Elyo Meir Bloch.
Oh, okay, thank you.
The Rashi's bothered with the question, why do we need to know where Yaakov left from? The point is where he's going. No one, very rarely do people ask you, you know, where you're coming. We know where you're coming from. We know where you were yesterday. If you tell your friend you're going on vacation, and you're going to say, I'm going to Miami. He's going to say, where'd you leave from? Where I was yesterday, in my house. That's where I came, left from. The point is not where you're leaving. The point is where you're going. So asks Rashi, so why does the Torah tell us Vayetze? So Rashi tells us a famous Yisoid, Elamagid sheyetziat tzadik min amokim oiseroishim. Person has to realize that when a tzadik leaves a place, it leaves the imprint on the place. Shebizman shat tzadik be'ir. If the tzadik is in the city is a different city. The moment the tzaddik leaves the city loses some of its glory, some of its fame, some of its beauty. And therefore, when Yaakov left Be'er Sheva was never the same again. So says Rashi. So the Kliokar and many others are bothered with the question that Yaakov was not the first gadol to leave a city. Avram traveled and Yitzchak traveled. You don't find anywhere else that there's such a big deal made about when a tzaddik leaves. Yaakov was not the first tzaddik to leave a location. So why is there so much mention of, oh, a tzaddik leaves, it has an imprint, it makes a ration, but we don't find it when Avraham Avinu travels at the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha. He comes to Eretz Canaan, then he goes to Mitzrayim. You don't see where it says over there, oh, you should know that when a tzaddik leaves, it makes a ration. Last week's Parsha, Yitzchak traveled. Why only by Yaakov? So the Kliokar gives a bunch of answers. His first answer is that over here there's a chiddush. Because when Yaakov left, Yitzchak and Rivka still lived in Be'er Sheva. So you were to say to yourself, maybe when a tzaddik leaves, it leaves an imprint. That's if the tzaddik leaves and the city is left with tzaddikim free. There's no one else there. But here there were other people there. Yitzchak was there and Rivka was there. So maybe in such a case, one would say that Yaakov leaving went unnoticed. On that, the pasuk says, no, even though there were other tzaddikim there, it still did not go unnoticed. And if Shmuel Rozovsky once had to be masked with four of Talmidim of his in Panovich Yeshiva that were killed in a car crash. And he elaborated on this yesterday, and he said, because every individual is a special experience. Every tzaddik, every great person is not like another great person. It's not just a question of numbers, more or less. It's individuality. Each tzaddik brings a certain koyach, a certain schus, a certain beauty to the town. So even though there's Yitzchak and Rivka still there, but it's not Yaakov. And Yaakov is not just more tzaddikim, but it's a different type of tzaddik. Shmuel Zofsky was saying this about Talmidim in the yeshiva, that these four Talmidim who were killed in this car crash, he was saying that they're all individually bringing something special to the yeshiva. And therefore the fact they're here, it's not that there's just four bachrim less in the yeshiva. They're four individuals that brought a certain kayach, a schos, a beauty, they're not here. That was the answer that he gave. The Kliokar gives another answer, which was actually a comment that the Malbim made to his Balabatim. Apparently the Malbim, when he left one of his towns, so the people said to him, Rabbi, why don't we feel the hoid and the hadar leaving? Right? You're supposed to feel like you're leaving. We're supposed to feel like, you know, something's happening. We don't feel it. So the Malbim told him, he said, pshat is that it only felt if there's someone left in the city that can feel such a loss. Meaning the chiddush is that when you leave, the people have to be margish, they have to be susceptible to feel what does it mean to lose a tzaddik. If they're so desensitized, they're so out to lunch, where they have absolutely no recognition of what does it mean to lose a tzaddik, of course it's not going to have an imprint. Says the Kliokar, when Avraham and Yitzchak left, So then no one cared that they left because they were so happy that they left. Because Avraham and Yitzchak were embodied their guilt. They, you know, they always felt bad doing Averis when Avraham Yitzchak was around. Avraham Yitzchak left, they were like thrilled. No one was margish. What does it mean to lose a tzaddik? But when Yaakov left, so Yitzchak and Rivka, they taka felt, oh, we're losing a tzaddik. So the Malbim said, you can only feel a tzaddik leaving if you actually understand what does it mean to have a tzaddik. If you don't know what it means to have a tzaddik, of course you're not going to feel his loss. And then the Kli Yaakov has a totally different teretz to the kasha of why did it say Vayetze Yaakov. And this is very, to me, an unbelievable chiddush. But I'm quoting from the Kli Yaakov, so you can't get upset at me. The Kli Yaakov says that the Lashon Vayetze implies that Yitzchak's Yaakov's intent was to leave home, never to return again. He says that sometimes you leave a place and you plan on coming back. He says the Lashon Vayetze gives off the impression that he was leaving, never to turn, never to look back again, never to reconnect to his roots, even though we know he comes back later. But the Kli Yaakov says the Lashon Vayetze is a very strong connotation. It connotates, I'm leaving and I'm done with you. I don't want to connect to that world that I was part of. And that was the tain on him. He says, and that's pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara says that Yaakov got punished for not doing kibud avim. I thought his parents commanded him. Talk to Kli Yaakov, yeah. But it was his attitude. His attitude was, I'm leaving to never come back again. To close that door, to close that chapter. That was wrong. He should have left with the intention, I'm going and I plan on coming back. And that's why it says, Lashon Vayetze, says the Kli Yaakov, to show us that even though he left, the Vayetze was wrong. The way he left was with an attitude of to never return, when it should have been more with an attitude, I hope to be back soon. Rav Moshe Shtemach says a pshat, which I think is so important for the world we live in today, and I saw a similar pshat from Rav Pam. You know, Avram and Yitzchak were activists in their community. Avram was an activist. He was a doer, he was an askin. So when Avram Avinu left, people felt it. You know, if you have a Chabad shliach in your community and the Chabad shliach leaves, I guarantee you everyone in the community feels it. You have the rabbi, everyone feels it because they're doing for the kehillah. But Yaakov Avinu was ishtom yeshev olam. Yaakov sat and learned the whole day. So did the community really feel Yaakov's loss? It wasn't like Yaakov gave a shir and had a chavrusa with everyone in the neighborhood, and he gave a chabur Thursday nights, and he spoke on Shabbos. He didn't do any of that. He was just learning. I'm losing my internet over here. He was just learning, and the impact wasn't felt really clearly on the people. So one would have thought that when Yaakov left, no one really knew the difference. On that, says the Torah, not so. That even though Yaakov, you would have thought that he was more not involved in the community, but his involvement was still in Torah, and that has a reshem on the community. And I always say this vart about a community koilel. Every community that has a koilel, very often people say, what do I gain from there being a koilel in my community? I go to work all day. I go to work in Manhattan. I'm in Manhattan. What does it help me that there's a koilel in my community? The answer is, it has a reshem on the community. You might not see it initially, you might not feel it, but I'm telling you, it leaves a reshem. And I saw Rav Pam makes this exact thing. Rav Pam said that when a community, he was once asked to speak at a community koilel, he said this vart, that when there's Torah learned in a community, when there's a makom Torah, it has an impact on the entire community. It changes the face of the community. It makes it a different community. And you'll say, what does it do for me? I'm not around at 2 o'clock in the afternoon when they're having second Seder. But I'm telling you, if Chazal tell us this, we believe it. That it leaves an imprint on the community. So just like Yaakov's learning Torah might not have been practical because he didn't give chaburas and he didn't say shiurim, but the fact that he was learning Torah in that community, it left a reshem on the community. And therefore, when he left, it left a mark. I think it's a very, very interesting idea about the koyach haTorah, the koyach of limud haTorah, when we don't even realize it sometimes, that what does it mean to have Torah and to have yeshivas. And it's I always say it's a shmirah on the community. The more communities have people learning Torah full-time throughout the day, I think is the greatest thing for any community. Okay, so what happens next? Yaakov is en route. Yaakov is traveling. So the pasuk tells us, Vayifka b'makom. He meets up with a place. So Rashi tells us from the Gemara that this is when Yaakov instituted the tefillah of Ma'ariv. So everyone knows the famous joke. Why did Yaakov institute Ma'ariv? Because Yaakov had 12 children. If he didn't go out at night for Ma'ariv, he'd be stuck doing 12 baths and 12 bedtimes. So Yaakov instituted Ma'ariv so he can get out of doing all the bedtime chores. Now why is this obviously not true? Besides the fact that's not true, it's because Yaakov instituted Ma'ariv before he had any kids. He instituted Ma'ariv now. Vayifka b'makom is when he instituted Ma'ariv. So that obviously is not, no legitimacy to that claim. So what happens? Yaakov institutes Ma'ariv. So the kasha is first of all, How do we know he instituted Ma'ariv? Maybe Vayifka is Losh and Tefillah. Maybe he just davened the Shachris. We don't know what time of the day the story is. Vayifka b'makom. Maybe davened Mincha. How do you know he instituted Ma'ariv? So the Mefarshim say, first of all, why would the Torah tell us this? Of course, he davened every day. Well, what's significant for us to know that he davened? The Torah says, not just that he davened, he instituted a new Tefillah. But there's something special about Ma'ariv. Why did Yaakov institute Ma'ariv now? So the Mefarshim point out, what's Ma'ariv? When do we daven Ma'ariv? We daven Ma'ariv at night. It's dark. It's scary. It's depressing. Night always represents negativity. We know that. Laila is not a shas. Rachamim, it's shas din. Night is always a negative connotation. Yaakov was the one who taught us. Yaakov was about to get into a very, very, you know, Yaakov represents difficult life. Yaakov represents a life of traveling, a life of dealing with difficult people. Yaakov did not exactly live the perfect life. Yitzchak had a much more of a relaxed life, if we can call such a thing. And again, Avraham Avinu didn't have an easy life because he jumped around with Nisyonis, but Yitzchak had a much more of a calmer life. Yaakov Avinu had a very difficult life. He's on the run, he's running from his brother, he's dealing with his father-in-law, he's having issues with Dina, a lot of things going on. But Yaakov represents a Jew in the gullus. Yaakov represents a Jew in the darkest of times. So that's why Yaakov was Misaka Ma'ariv. Ma'ariv is at the darkest of times, dark at night. You don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. You don't know what's in store for us. And even in the darkest of times, that's B'davka when we daven Ma'ariv. When we're in the darkest, deepest, scariest place of our day, that's when we go daven Ma'ariv. And that's why Yaakov was Misaka Ma'ariv B'davka now. Now at this time, when he's dark, he's going into a new path, he's leaving the comfort zone of his home and yeshiva, he's going to a new world, the unknown, chutz laaretz, shidduchim, all of those parashiyos that are very scary, that's bedafka when a person has to daven, that even in the darkest of times, in the scariest of times, we turn to Hashem for tefillah, and we hope that everything will go okay. So what happens? He davens, kiva Hashem, because it's the sun sets, vayikach me'avnei ha'makom, he takes stones, and he puts them around his head. So Rashi says, why exactly does he put stones around his head? Because he wanted to protect himself from wild animals. Now, I am not a big outdoorsman. I don't like to go outside. I don't like to go sleep in a tent. But I can tell you one thing. If you're worried about a bear, putting stones around your head will not do much for you. I understand you want to bring a gun. You want to bring, you know, pepper spray. I get it. What exactly was Yaakov thinking of here? He's going to put a bunch of stones around his head. And therefore, if a lion comes, he's safe. Now it's a pella. So the Alta from Kelm said that the lesson over here is that every Jew has to do his shtadlis. You have to do your shtadlis. Every Jew's shtadlis is measured by his emunah b'Hashem. The larger your emunah b'Hashem is, the less shtadlis you need to do. So Yaakov was a big maimon b'Hashem. So he had to do a little bit of shtadlis. This was enough shtadlis for Yaakov Avinu. Putting stones around his head, that was genuk shtadlis for Yaakov Avinu. But or say it a little differently, that was the best he could do. You know, what else was he supposed to do? He didn't exactly have the availability to do more than that. He did whatever he can do. But Yaakov Avinu did his shtadlis. Yaakov Avinu teaches us that we can't just throw up our hands and say, Hashem, make it work for me. Perform a miracle. I'm Yaakov Avinu, perform a miracle. No. A person in life has to do his shtadlis, whatever he could do, at best he can do, to try to deal with a situation that is complex, that is scary, that is difficult. We need to always do our shtadlis. Rashi tells us the famous Medrash that the rocks were all fighting with each other. Each one wanted the tzaddik to have his head on it. So they made up Shara. The rock became one big rock, and Yaakov put his head on that one big rock. So the Bali Musa point out over here that Yaakov Avinu couldn't put his head on any of the rocks because the rocks were all fighting. Yaakov couldn't put his head on Machloikis. They were fighting. Even though it was Machloikis, Hashem Shemayim. We know every Machloikis today is Hashem Shemayim. Everything is Hashem Shemayim. But nonetheless, when there was a rift, there was not unity, Yaakov couldn't put his head until there was unity, until they all came to as one. The importance of Achdus and Klai, so we shouldn't have fights and disagreements, even though we label them and we coin them L'Shem Shemayim, half the time they're not L'Shem Shemayim, but the idea of fights and disagreements, there's no bracha found on fights and disagreements. We need to have Achdus. When there's Achdus, then Yaakov can put his head down. So what happens? So Yaakov has this dream, and the Pasuk tells us that this is the first time Yaakov sleeps. Vayishkav b'makamhu, Rashi quotes an unbelievable medrash, that the 14 years that he was in Aver, he did not sleep. So we all know you can't take this Rashi literally, because the Gemara tells us, Mishnah tells us, that if a person makes a neder that I'm not going to sleep for a month, it's not a neder. Why? Because we know a person cannot go more than 3 days without sleep. So we all know, what does Rashi mean? It means he never slept in a bed. He slept in his chair, he fell asleep on a shtender, he never got into his pajamas and got into his bed and, you know, read a book. That he never did. His 14 years in Shem Ve'ever, or Shem, wherever he was learning, that was fully focused on learning. He never went into bed. They say this Satmar Rebbe never went into bed a whole week. The only time the Satmar Rebbe used to go into bed was only on Friday nights. The rest of the week, the Satmar Rebbe slept in his chair. He dozed off in his chair. Right, many of us doze off in our chair also, but then we go to bed when we wake up. But the Satmar Rebbe would not sleep in a bed all week long. He would only sleep in a bed on Friday night. That's why the story goes that I think it was with the Panovich Rav. And the Panovich Rav was in Florida. And he was staying there to collect money. So that when he came to the host said, "Do you need a bed?" So he says, "What else am I going to do?" He said, "Well, because the person who was here before you didn't need a bed. It was a Satmar Rebbe. And the Satmar Rebbe never slept in a bed. So he didn't need a bed. It wasn't, but he wanted to know if you need a bed." So, okay, so we try to sleep in a bed. So Yaakov, you know, didn't sleep much when he was in Shem Be'er. But the million dollar question over here is, why was he taking a break to go to yeshiva? Dad told him, find the shidduch. And he says, "Okay, Dad, I'm taking a break for 14 years." You know, that doesn't work like that. If your father tells you, you know, I understand that many times children delay doing what their parents ask them. 14 years delay? What was he doing 14 years in Shem Ve'ever? So the truth is, Rabbeinu Bechaya learns that Yitzchak told him to go to yeshiva. It doesn't sound like that in the Pesukim, but Rabbeinu Bechaya writes in this week's parasha, Yitzchak told him, "I want you to go to yeshiva for 14 years before you look for a shidduch." That's Rabbeinu Bechaya's pshat. Others learn that he actually went to Shem Ve'ever as like a witness protection program. He figured, where is Esav not going to come look for me? Esav not coming into yeshiva. It's not the place for Esav. So he figured it's safe. I'll hang out in yeshiva. Yeshiva is a safe place. That's why he was still in Choron. He was still in Be'er Sheva because he first went to learn for 14 years. What do you mean if you're leaving because of Esav? What are you doing? The answer was he figured Esav's not coming to look for me in Beis Medrash. If I sit in Beis Medrash a whole day, Esav won't find me. If I go to the basketball court, I go out to the park, Esav might find me there. So Yaakov said, "I'll stay in Beis Medrash. I guarantee Esav's not coming into Beis Medrash." But I told my Talmidim today, my Talmidim are boys who spend the morning learning and then the afternoons they go to college and they hopefully will get jobs and go work. I told them this week's parasha is the parasha of transitioning from yeshiva to the working world. That's Mamas, this week's parasha. Yaakov Avinu was in Shem Ve'ever to learn how to transition from a yeshiva bachar to a good, healthy member of society. Yaakov Avinu went to learn what do you need to be in yeshiva for? To learn to grow in what capacity? So most people think you go to yeshiva to learn Torah. You know how to be a big lamdin. You learn halal, you learn lamdis, and you learn bikiyas. All true. But one of the things a person learns in yeshiva is how to be a mensch. How to conduct yourself. How to interact with other people. So Yaakov went to Shem Ve'eva to learn, to get well, to engross himself in learning, to not just know another shtickle Torah and a Rambam. Was to be a better person. When he comes out, he's going to know how to deal with the ups and downs of a loved one, how to deal with an ace, and how to deal with all these difficult things. So this expression is really the transitioning of yeshiva to what I call the working world. And Yaakov knew that. Yaakov knew this is his last hurrah in learning. And that's why Yaakov didn't go to sleep. Yaakov didn't stay up for 14 years because he made a conscious decision. You know what? I want to tell everyone that I stayed up for 14 years. Like, you know, today you have in the yeshivas, you know, boys stay up Thursday night. So in order to stay up Thursday night, they have to eat, you know, they drink 12 coffees. They sleep the whole Thursday. They stay up Thursday night and they sleep the whole Friday, Shabbos, and Sunday. To be mekayim the mitzvah deraisa of staying up Thursday night. That's not the pshat. Yaakov even said to himself, "How can I go to sleep? This is crunch time. I'm only have a certain amount of time left here in yeshiva, and then I got to go to work." And the moment he realized that this is his last hurrah in yeshiva, he couldn't go to sleep because it was too precious. He wanted to chop every minute that he had learning. He wanted to be able to learn because he realized it's coming to an end soon. He realized that he's not going to be able to learn forever. He wasn't going to be able to start the first Kollel movement. He knew that wasn't happening. He knew he had to chop a rhyme whatever he could. So how could you sleep? You got to use every moment wisely and carefully. Yaakov Kamenetsky famously said that what he learned to learn by Aver and Shame was how to deal with a corrupt society. Shame lived through a very difficult time, and Aver lived through difficult times. The purpose of going to that yeshiva wasn't just to learn how to learn a sugya up. Was to learn how to deal with corrupt people and how to deal with the gullus and how to deal with being not in your comfort zone, which is all what yeshiva should be teaching our boys today also. I think part of what yeshiva should be teaching the Talmidim is not just to say Shtukal Torah, because most of the Talmidim and most of the yeshivas don't have the privilege of staying and learning forever. And you have to go into what's called the real world. I don't like to call it the real world, I like to call it the secular world. And we, you know, Torah is the real world, but, you know, the more secular world where you have a job and you have to interact with other people, the yeshiva should be teaching them how to deal with that. And how you're supposed to come out of the yeshiva and you can see that you learned in yeshiva. My Rosh Yeshiva, B'Zalag Epstein, Zasal, used to say that the greatest joy he'd hear when people would say that your Talmidim are good people. They're honest. They're nice. They're considerate. Not that they know how to say Eshtekot Torah. They didn't do it for him. To hear that his Talmidim know how to say Pshat and Rambam, he wasn't so impressed. But if you could say that his Talmidim lived a life that shows you learned in yeshiva, you're a mensch. You talk nicely. You're honest in business. You know how to get along with the coworkers. You know how to interact with other people. That's what yeshivas should be helping produce for the next generation. And there's a famous Rambam in Hilchos Chiras. The Rambam writes that we learn from this week's parasha how to be a good worker. Yaakov was the perfect worker. He worked for his father with such honesty and such, you know, never budging, never cheating. And the Rambam says, and Yaakov was a tzaddik. No one ever thinks of Yaakov as a tzaddik. The Rambam writes Yaakov was a tzaddik. And the Mepharshim say, you see from over there, you know what it means to be a tzaddik? Being honest in business makes you a tzaddik. Be a good worker. You don't cheat the company. You show up when you're supposed to. You know, you don't steal from the company. You do what you're supposed to. Das Yashrus. That's what Yaakov learned in his years in yeshiva. That's what where Yaakov focused on those 14 years, was how to live an honest lifestyle, how to be a good Jew, how to be an honest Jew. That's what the yeshivas, in my opinion, should be focusing a little bit more, maybe a little less lumdus, because, you know, that's not necessarily going to make the difference in the business world, but a little bit more focus on how to be a good Yid. That when a person leaves yeshiva, it should be recognizable that he learned in yeshiva. That he's a ben yeshiva, that should be seen on his face. And it's interesting, after Yaakov leaves yeshiva, we don't really hear much about his life and learning. You know, I believe that Yaakov learned, I'm sure Yaakov learned whenever he had free time. But Yaakov was a working man, and when you're a working man, you have other responsibilities. And he knew that. He had a large family, he had a job, and he took his job very seriously. I don't think for a second Yaakov sat when he was supposed to be watching the animals with the sefer open. I think he was watching the animals, because that was his job. His job was to be a shomer. So if you're going to do your job, you're not gonna have the svarim out, because that's not honest, and that's not fair. Same story where Reb Gussman was somewhere, and the Chazon Ish came. He didn't know who the Chazon Ish was. He said, yes, the Chazon Ish knew. Do you learn? Do you learn Torah? The Chazon Ish said, when I have time, I learn Torah. That's the Chazon Ish told him. But I think the message of that story was that avada, we all have responsibilities. I think everyone has responsibilities. Anyone that has a job has responsibilities. And you're not supposed to learn during that time. I always tell my Talmidim, if you learn when you're in college, it's bitul Torah l'mafre. It's wrong. Because then you're not focusing on your studies. And when you're at your job, you shouldn't be learning either. The Chiyuv Talmud Torah is when you have free time, like the Chazon Ish said. When you have free time, you're not doing anything, and you have no other responsibilities. That's when you should learn. But when you're at work, and you're supposed to, and you're on the company's money, you should not be learning. Absolutely not. That's Kneva. And when you're doing things, and when, you know, today, you know, sometimes I try to listen to Shulman with my kids, it's probably wrong also. I'm supposed to be focused on watching them. Now's not the time to learn. A person has to realize what the time is. And Yaakov Avinu, I think, realized that. That's when he was in Shem Ve'eva, he was totally focused on learning. Then he left Shem Ve'eva, he had to focus on other things. So Yaakov's learning in Shem Ve'eva was really a lesson for life, in my opinion, of how to make that transition in life from full-time learning to the secular world. So what happens? He has his dream, and there's a ladder in the dream. And there's many, many important messages from the ladder itself. The Baal HaTurim says that the word sulam is gematria mammon, money, which fits very nicely with what we just said before. This was Yaakov's first transition from the learning world to the working world. One of the biggest nisyonos many people have when they leave that world to the other world is the nisyon of taivas mammon. You're presented with many dilemmas when it comes to striving to make money, to do things that are questionable, to do things that are borderline illegal, to do things that are not halachically okay, is a very strong tavas moment. So the ladder is reminding Yaakov, listen Yaakov, money. Sulam is money. Money is a very, very slippery thing. Money is something that can be very helpful. A person makes a lot of money, he could support institutions, he could support Torah, he could do chesed, fantastic. But the tavas moment could end in a very bad place also. A person is so driven, so focused on money, he could take away from his time from learning. And it could also make him do things that are questionable, things that are not legal, things that are not halachically sanctioned. So that's one gematria that's very important. And this is, again, this was a transition that Yaakov Avinu had to get used to, the transition of working and valuing money, but not overvaluing money. A person goes to work, he has to value money. Because if not, you're not going to get paid by your boss. If you don't care about money, your boss is not going to pay you. And then you're not going to be able to support your family. So you have to value money, and you have to be driven to do what you want. you have to be driven to do your job, because if not, you're not going to be good at your job. But where's that drive and that balance of, I want to be good at my job, but I also want to have time to learn. I also want to have time for my family. It's a very, very difficult balance. And that's what the latter was. That's what the latter meant. The Balaturim has another gematria, that the latter represents, that the gematria is the word koil, a sound. And he writes that the koil atfila is brought up by the malachim. We all have this koyach, that we have a sound, we have a voice, that we say things and it goes up to Shemayim. It could be tefillah, it could be Torah, it could be a kind word, it could be a compliment. These things all go up. These things all have an unbelievable power to be brought up to HaKadosh Baruch. Okay, so that's all the initial dream that he has. And he has this ladder. And what happens in the dream? The malachim are going up and down. And Hashem tells him, "V'hinei Hashem nitzov alav." Hashem stands there by Yoimar, and he says, "Ani Hashem Elokei Avram. I am Hashem, who's the God of your father, of Avram, your father, and the God of Yitzchak." So there's something that is very interesting about the wording of this pasuk. Avram is referred to as his father, and Yitzchak is not called his father. Now, who was Yaakov's father? Yitzchak. So if the pasuk should have written, "I am Hashem, who's the God of Avraham, your grandfather," Velokei Yitzchak Avicha, because Yitzchak is his father. So the Cheskuni says, you learn from this pasuk a rule called Bnei Bonim Areim Kibonim, that grandchildren are like children. So even though Avraham Avinu was only the grandfather, he could be referred to as the father. But again, still a bit strange. Also, why over here? Why is this the place to teach us Bnei Bonim Areim Kibonim? So the Chida says a Gevaldik Echidish. The Chida says that the pshat in the pasuk is that, again, I'm not saying this on my own, the Chida saying this late 18th century. Says the Chida that Avraham Avinu and Yaakov had a very close relationship. They had a loving relationship. He loved him like a son and he viewed him like a father. Yitzchak, not so. Because Yitzchak was so beloved with Esav, so Yaakov felt a little less connected to Yitzchak. So when it came to Avraham Avinu, he viewed him as a father because he was so close with his Zayd Avraham Avinu. They were close, they learned together, they connected, so that's why he was able to refer to him as Avich. So what happens in the Pasuk? So he tells him, don't worry, he gives him this beautiful bracha. But the pasuk tells us that what happens, so Yaakov wakes up, and he says, oh, no, Hashem is here, I didn't know. So the Majid Rebbe says a pshat on the pasuk, which is such a chizik for all of us. He says, he's referring to Klal Yisrael. When we finally wake up from the dream that we're living in this world, by Yomarin, we say to ourselves, we wake up and we say, you know what? God is running the world. God is here. Let's wake up from this idea that we need to understand the world and we need to understand what's going on and we need to run the world. And we say to ourselves, let's wake up from that stupor of sleep. And by Hashem is here. We have no understanding of His ways. Says the Majid Rebbe, when we come to that realization, then we'll see brachas of Yeshua's. And we realize we got to wake up from this stupor. We think that we understand, that we have to understand, why did Trump lose and why did Biden win? What's going on over here? It doesn't make any sense. It's connected to Teva. Why is there a second round of COVID? We don't understand it. So we need to wake up and say, Yesh Hashem, I'm walking with that. Don't worry, Hashem is here. He's got it covered. And I have no idea what's going on. The moment we come to that Hakara, we'll be much better off. Says the Majid Rebbe, that's the lesson in this week's parasha. The moment we come to that realization of, I have no idea what's going on, but Yesh Hashem, I'm walking with that. Don't worry. Hashem never asked me for my advice till now. He doesn't need my advice and my input. He'll do quite all right without me. Then we'll be able to see unbelievable brachas of Yeshua. So what happens? Yaakov is obviously very moved by this experience. And what happens? The pasuk tells us, Reb Steinman, it points out on the pasuk, I love Reb Steinman's Sefer on Chumash. It's so like, he makes the observations of things we wouldn't have think about. So he writes over here that Yaakov says, he says it. Like, did he say it out loud? Like, did he make a, did he like say it to, there was no one there. He's in the forest by himself. Who's the Vayomer? Who does he say it to? Who's he talking to? Okay. So what happens? So the pasuk tells us he makes a neder. There we go. He makes a neder, so the halakha, the Gemara actually says, we learn from it that a person is supposed to make nedar in b'shas tzara. And a person is going through a difficult time, he should talk and make promises. He should make promises that he wants to do things and help things and help people and do tzedakah. That's the right thing to do. A person should talk and make nedar. Normally the Gemara says it's better not to make nedarim, but a person is experiencing difficulties, then it's a good thing to make a neder. So what does he say to Hashem? Im yelakim amadi u'shmarani b'derech, Hashem will guard me on this path. What does he mean, guard me? So Pashup Shat, you know, from being physically harmed. The Medrash says, you know what he was asking Hashem? Guard me that I don't speak Lashon Hara. So says the Chafetz Chaim, look what you see from over here. You see from over here that what was worrying Yaakov Avinu was that he's transferring over into a new world. He's leaving the Kaisli Beis Medrash, he's leaving the yeshiva life to go into the secular world. And what was his biggest concern? Lashon Hara. He was worried about Lashon Hara. He wasn't worried about anything else, he was worried about Lashon Hara. So I think the pshat might be, my humble opinion, is, you know, Yaakov Avinu was worried about a lot of things. He's worried about the Taivas HaMammon, he's worried about a lot of things. But most of us would say, you know, my least important concern is Lashon Hara. Now, if I come back from work every day and I make a Kiddush Hashem and I don't cheat the company, so I spoke a little Lashon Hara, halavai, the worst thing I do. Yaakov Avinu is teaching us, no, fakert. Because that's the thing on the lowest of everyone's value system. And everyone says, it's not the end of the world. Yaakov says, no, I'm worried about that. Because no one else is being machshiv it, because people think as long as I'm not doing worse things, it's okay. No, I want to make sure that I don't even chas v'shalom fall into the trap of speaking Lashon Hara. So what happens? So he asks Hashem, for what? Give me bread to eat and clothing to clothe me. So the Rabbeinu Bechai points out Yaakov Avinu was asking for very little. Yaakov Avinu was not asking for a lap of luxury. He wasn't asking for tons of money. He was just asking for the bare minimum. So Zok the Rabbeinu Bechai, we learn from over here that we really don't need as much as we think we need. A person in life should ask for any basic necessities. Again, today basic necessities might include an iPhone. I'm not disagreeing with that premise. And Wi-Fi. But the basic necessities sometimes are more than people think. A basic necessities, a person needs food, needs clothing, health, you know, we don't always need, you know, the third vacation house is not necessarily what we need in this life. And the Chafetz Chaim used to live like this. You know, we talk about it. Chafetz Chaim's house was the barest of the barest of anything. So someone asked him once, why don't you have furniture? He said, because I'm only a visitor here. Why should I have furniture? The Chafetz Chaim lived it. Like, he really believed that this world is just a trackline for the next world. We don't. But, you know, every once in a while we have to remind ourselves that, you know, it's not about that. So once the Chafetz Chaim's Rebbetzin apparently was by Reb Chaim Moizer. The Chafetz Chaim went with his wife to Reb Chaim Moizer and they were there. And he noticed, the Rebbetzin noticed that Reb Chaim Moizer's house was actually very nice. He actually had shades on the window. The Chafetz Chaim didn't even have window shades. Chafetz Chaim mamash lived in such a dachkus, we can't even imagine. That's the famous story why they didn't want to show off the Chafetz Chaim's Becher. The family didn't want to show it because his becher was so small. Mamish so small. You know, today would never fly for a becher for this year. But he lived in such poverty. So the Rebbetzin of the Chafetz Chaim turns to him and says, I don't understand, look at Rebbe Chaim Moizer. He's living with luxury. So why can't we have a little luxury? So the Chafetz Chaim told his Rebbetzin, you have to understand, Rebbe Chaim Moizer is the Nasi of Klal Yisrael. He's the leader of Klal Yisrael. He needs to have a little bit of a nicer house. But we're simple folk. We don't need a nice house. Good luck telling your wife that one today. But in any case, that's what the Chafetz Chaim told his Rebbetzin. And the Chafetz Chaim mamish lived there. He said, This week's parasha, you see clearly that it's mamish about simplicity. Yaakov didn't ask for anything fancy. Beged, little boyish lechem lechel. Again, I'm not trying to fool us and think that that's what, you know, we should live today with bread and water. I know we need more than that. I'm not foolish. But I think even in our world in 2020, there are certain things that we need, which I think we all need to live. To say you're going to live without a car, I think is not practical. But we need cars. You need to get from point A to point B. The way you do it is, I in Eretz Yisrael, they all take public service. Okay. In America, I think needing a car is a pretty normal, I don't call it a luxury, but there's a lot of other things beyond that. You know, people need to go away for this and that. You need this, you need that. We don't need as much as we think we need. Some things we do need. A person needs food. He needs clothing. He needs heat in the winter. Those are things that we definitely do need. So what happens? So the pasuk tells us, Yaakov Avinu says, if everything goes well, whatever you give to me, aser asfer Allah, I will take off a tenth of a tenth. This is the makar for giving meiser. We've spoken about this in the Halacha Shurim, that Yaakov Avinu instituted meiser mamonus, to take off a tenth of lav dafka from grain or from something grown in the field, but to take off meiser from all of his estates. The Gemara makes a drash and ksubis from this pasuk that al yivazviz yoyisem mechemish. A person is not allowed to give away more than a fifth of his money. Because aser asrenu is a tenth of a tenth. We learn from over here 2/10, which is a fifth. So we learn from over here that a person is not allowed to spend more than a fifth of his money. Not only is he not allowed to spend more than a fifth of his money on staka, the Ramah passes in the Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed to spend more than a fifth of your money on a mitzvah. So if you only have very little money, you're not mechuyav to lose all your money to do a mitzvah. We mentioned in the past that the Mishnah Berurah brings down a Shita Mekubetzes, that the Shinu Kubetz says there's one exception to the rule of Ayivaz is Yesim Chaimish, and every fundraiser in any yeshiva needs to know this, that to support Torah, you're allowed to go more than a Chaimish. So if you go to someone, you say, I want you to support Torah, the guy says, well, I'm not giving away more than a Chaimish. Mishnah Berurah Paskens Halacha L'Maisa, that for Torah, you're allowed to give away more. But I saw this week a word from the Baba Vareba. The Baba Vareba said that Rebbes are allowed to give away more than a fifth also. If you read all the stories about Rebbes, all the great Rebbes, they mamish gave away every dime that they had. They lived mamish bedachkus. The Klausenberger Rebbe, he had nothing. The Satmar Rebbe, I know. So you look at Satmar today, you say, what are you talking about? They're such a wealthy chassidus. They themselves mamish were broke. The Klausenberger Rebbe was mamish broke. He gave away every penny that came to his pocket, he gave away. The Rebbes were mamish gave away every dime they had. It says, Ayivazvi. So the Baba of the Rebbe said, Ayivazvi, the Gemara says, why shouldn't you give away all your money? Because if you're going to be poor, now you become a burden on society. So said the Baba of Rebbe, but Rebbes as it is get supported by society. They don't have jobs, they don't get salaries. So as it is, they have to come onto the community. So not so bad if they give away all their money. So that's the exception that they say, that Rebbes are allowed to be Mavaz V'Zyayis Mechemish. And again, you'll read many stories about many of the great Rebbes of the previous generations. They taka would give away all the money that they had. Okay, let's move on. So Yaakov gets this very exciting news that he's going to be, feels comfortable, that everything's going to work out well. So he now has a step, Vayisa Yaakov Raglov. He's excited to go now, and he goes. What happens? He goes and he sees that there is three shepherds sitting there, and there's this big rock on top of the be'er, and everyone's gathered around the rock. And the point is that you got to get the rock off the top of it in order to draw the water. So what's Yaakov's opening line to the group of people he never met before? So the pasuk tells us, "Vayomer lahem Yaakov, Achai, my brothers, me'ematem, where are you from?" So Yaakov Kamenetsky makes the following observation. Says Yaakov, what's that word, Achai, my brothers? Says Yaakov, because what's about to happen? In a few lines, Yaakov's about to give them Musa. He's about to say to them, oh guys, why are you wasting time? Get to work. Said Yaakov, you can't give Musa to people that you don't have a relationship with. Well, I'm going to walk in, I don't know you, you don't know me, I'm a foreigner. First thing I do is give Musa. Well, come to you, who are you? So to Yaakov, you have to build a relationship. Achai. You start off with saying, my brother, my friend, my pal, I care about you. Now that I care about you, now that I worry about you, now I can ask you what's going on over here. Someone just told me this week that the Nesiv Shalom, the great Slonim Rebbe, used to tell people, I don't give Musar to people that I'm not close with. And it's such a profound statement. Today, there's no shortage of people that are more than happy to give you Musar, and they don't know anything about you. But they'll give you the longest Musar shmiz you've ever heard in your life. But to give real Musar, you have to know the person. You have to know you. I have to know your shortcomings. Islam Rebbe said he can't give Musa to someone unless he knows him very well. I think it's such an insight. And that's Mamash Rebbe Yaakov is saying from Yaakov Avinu. You can't just go around writing, yelling, and screaming at people. Well, you give Musa. I was invited to come speak in a community, in a shul. So the person told me, just do me a favor, don't give them Musa. I said, why would I give them Musa? I don't even know who they are. They're probably better than me. I don't know who they are. I mean, I'm going to come to a in my shul, my Baal Batim, I can give them Musa. That's what I'm paid to do. That's my job, to give them Musa. I know them, I know their shortcomings. My Talmidim I can give Musa to. But I'm going to walk into a foreign community where I don't know anyone, I'm a guest speaker, I'm going to spend the whole drasha yelling and screaming at them. I don't even know who they are. Achutzpah. The Yaakovina said, you can't give Musa to people you don't know. So he starts off with Achai, my brothers. He's trying to build a rapport. He's trying to build a relationship, and by doing so, he's able to succeed in giving Musa. In last week's parasha, there's a pasuk that the Chavetz Chaim makes a diak on, which I think is in line with what we're saying now for Rabbi Yaakov. At the end of last week's parasha, Yitzchak comes to Yaakov and says, Tatala, I want you to go get a shidduch, but I don't want you to take a girl from Benoit Knan. But look at the way the pasuk is structured. Vayikra Yitzchak al Yaakov, he calls over Yitzchak, Vayivarcha, so he gives him a bracha. Vayitzavei, when he commands him, he tells him, don't take a wife from Benoit Knan. Says the Chavetz Chaim, you want to hear an unbelievable lesson in chinuch? Sometimes we have to give rules to our children. You can't do this, you can't do that. But how do you start the conversation? So you could have started the conversation. You can't do this, you can't do that. Oh, and I love you. Said the Chavetz Chaim, start the conversation the other way around. I love you. Here's a bracha. And by the way, you can't do this, you can't do that. Where's it coming from now? It's coming from now that the limitation that I put on you is because I love you. It's because I care about you. And that's why you can't hang out with your friends, and you can't do that and this. So the Chavetz Chaim, when you start from that point, it's much more accepted. As opposed to starting from the things he can't do. Which I think is a similar idea also. When you feel that the person who's limiting you or giving you musr or whatever it is, if you feel like it's coming from a place of love, of care and concern, it's much more it has a much better chance of being accepted or being heard. So what happened? Yaakov comes to town. He says, and by the way, have you guys heard of a guy named Lavan ben Nachar? When they say Yodan, we know who he is. Now there's only one problem. There's no person named Lavan ben Nachar. His name was Lavan ben Besuel. Besuel ben Nachar. Who's Lavan ben Nachar? So the Chizkuni says that apparently that Besuel died already. And when Lavan came to Charan, he was already known as Lavan ben Nachar. Because Besuel already died, no one knew that Lavan Besuel existed. But the Kliyakar has a different shot. The Kliyakar says that when he was asking, do you know Lavan ben Nachar? Because Nachar Kliyakar says Nachar was a good guy. He was a straight up, he was a Yosh. So he was asking, is Lavan ben Nachar? Is Lavan like Nachar, meaning straight up, or is he not? What type of guy is Lavan? He was doing a Shidduch resume. What type of guy is Lavan? I want to hear how my uncle Lavan is. Is my uncle like Arzeda Nachar, who's good, or is he not? And according to the Kliyakar, the answer was, yeah, he is. He's a Yosher. I don't know if I'd call Lavan a Yosher, but that's what the Kliyakar says. And there's a famous halacha that we learn from over here, that Amal passed in the Shulchan Aruch based on the Trumas Hadeshen, that if you have a kid whose father is not religious, and he doesn't want to be called up, he doesn't want to be Ben Him. He wants to use a different name. So the Ramah says you can be called up by your grandfather's name for an aliyah. Says the Ramah, how do you know? From this week's parsha, from the fact that we call Lavan ben Nachar. So you see, it's okay to associate someone ben his grandfather. And therefore, the Ramah passed in the Shulchan Aruch, you have the right to call someone by the name of ben grand, the son, instead of saying he's the son of his father, you're allowed to say he's the son of his grandfather. So what happens? So, Vayomu lehem hashalom loy. How are things by him? Is he doing well? Vayomu shalom, peace. Vehine Rachel, bito boam atzoyin, now Rachel appears. Vayomu, and he says to them, hein oide hayim godol, it's still early. Loy eis ha'asaf ha'mech, it's not time to gather. This is when he gives the musr. Hashku atzoyin l'churu, let's go give the sheep to drink. So the Mefarshim pointed out that Yaakov was worried about two things bothered Yaakov. One thing bothered Yaakov is if these guys are paid by the hour, they're not working. They're ripping off their boss. That's one thing that bothered Yaakov. And the other thing that bothered Yaakov was that he felt bad for the animals. The animals are not getting their needed drinks. Yaakov was such a compassionate person, he was worried about the animals. One of the great characteristic traits of all of our leaders is compassion for those that often people don't give compassion to. Medrash tells us Moshe Rabbeinu had such an unbelievable compassion when he was a Rayat Tzoyin, when he was a shepherd. It was one of the reasons why Hashem picked him to lead Klal Yisrael. Compassion is something that we as leaders need to have in order to be good leaders. If you look at all our greatest leaders in Klal's history, they had unbelievable compassion for everyone. Not only for wealthy and reputable people. They took time and effort even in the lowest members of our society. So Yaakovino was worried about the animals. The animals need drink. The animals need what they have. The Mefarshim say, I think Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz says, that what was he saying over here? That Hein Oid Hayim Gadol, the day is still early. He was saying because maybe the farmers are going to say like this to themselves. Remember yesterday the sun set early. Because Rashi says that when Yaakov slept yesterday, the sun set early. So they'll say to themselves, maybe the sun's going to set early today, so we should stop working. On that, Yaakov says, no. Lo Yisar said, I am a gadol. Don't worry. Today's going to be a long day. The sun's not setting early today. Get back to work. There's no reason to think that the sun is going to set early. That's the Yerushalayim and Eibshitz says that pshat in the pasuk. So what happens? So the pasuk tells us, "Vayomru, okay, we can't do it." So Yaakov comes, big, muscular Yaakov. He comes and he knocks the rock off the pit, and all of a sudden everyone can go drink. Rashi says he knocked it off like a bottle cap. Now I know today in the yeshivas, at least in Eretz Yisrael, they have unbelievable workout rooms in the yeshivas, so you can go to yeshiva and work out and come out buff and in good shape. I don't know if Beis Medrash Hashem Ve'Ever had a workout room. I would venture to believe it didn't. So where did Yaakov have all his energy from? All the strength that Yaakov would just come over and knock the bottle, knock this huge, the three shepherds couldn't do it together. And Yaakov comes, knocks it off. Where did Yaakov have such energy from? Where did he work out like this? So Chazal asked, we know that, Mefarshim asked, we know Chazal tell us that Torah is Mateshes Kerech Hashalad, and the more you learn, the weaker you become. So Yaakov was this weak guy. Where did he have this energy to do this? So B'chaim Shmuel it says an idea in life that if we hone in, if we focus on something intently, we can do more than we think. You put all your energy into something, you can accomplish great things. So he said, Yaakov put all his energy into it. Hamshalev says in learning, if a person focuses fully, puts all his energy into understanding something, he can understand much more than he thinks he'd be able to understand. Okay, so what happens? So he's there and Rachel comes. Vahika Shiro Yaakov is Rachel ben Bas Lavan Achiima. He sees his Rachel, who's the daughter of his uncle, and the sheep. Vahigash Yaakov. Yaakov comes close. He knocks it off. And now here's always a pasuk that bothered me. Vayishak Yaakov leRachel. Gives her a kiss. Now that would never fly today. Right? That would never be accepted today. So what's going on with it? Vayishak Yaakov leRachel. Yaakov kisses her. Vayishak Yaakov, and then he cries. Very strange. Very strange experience over here. So Rabbeinu Bechaya writes over here that she was very little. Rachel was a little girl. He says that Rachel was so little, she wasn't even Ruya Lebal yet. She wasn't even like in the parasha of Shidduchim. You think Rachel would be a girl who's in Shidduchim, she's going to stroll out there and work in the men's? It's not sneeze. She was a little girl. And therefore he says that's why Leah didn't work. Leah was much older. Leah was already in the parasha of Shidduchim. Leah was in the parasha of Shidduchim. It wasn't sneeze for Leah to be out there with the men. But Rachel was a little girl, you know, innocent little girl. So he says, that's why it was okay. He says, maybe he kissed her on her head or on her shoulder, but he didn't kiss her on her mouth. Okay? So it was like a little girl. It wasn't like a romantic thing. That's Rabbeinu Bechaya's pshat. So why did he cry? So I saw a gewaldige pshat that his crying showed that this wasn't a romantic kiss. If you want to have a romantic kiss, you're not going to cry. It ruins the kind of the whole feeling. So he bedavka cried to show everyone, this is not a romantic. I'm not kissing Rachel. I'm kissing her. She's my relative. She's my cousin. It was totally not anything more than just a family type of experience. That's the way some before she wanted to explain. But why did he cry? So Rashi tells us two pshat. One pshat is that he cried because he saw with Ruach HaKodesh that she's not going to be buried with her. Okay, so the obvious question on that is, you know, that's like a really long time from now. You know, most people don't think when they get engaged to their kala, the first thing they do is not, you know, okay, let's get burial plots for each other. The first thing you do is, you know, you live a long life together. You don't think about the burial plots right away. Why was that something he was thinking about? Some Mefarshim say he wasn't crying about being buried next to her, not being buried next to her. He was crying about why he wasn't buried next to her. Because I'll tell us, why was Yaakov not buried next to Rachel? Because Rachel needed to be Mevaka al Baneo. Because when Klai Yisrael goes to Golos, they need to pass Rachel. So Yaakov was crying on the fact that Rachel was not buried next to him because Rachel needs to be there for the Golos. It means Klai Yisrael is going into the Golos. And that's why he cried. He cried over the fact that he anticipated, that he knew that there was going to be a Golos. The Sforno says he cried because he felt bad that he was so old. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that Rachel was 8. And he was 63. It's a big age gap. So he cried because like he felt guilty or he felt bad that, you know, he was so old. Even though, again, she wasn't of age to get married yet. She was a little girl. But nonetheless, that's why he cried. So what happens? Lavan hears. I think it's late already. So Lavan hears that his nephew's in town. And he runs to him. And he hugs him. And he kisses him. And he brings him into the house. And Rashi tells us this is all Shalai Lishma. This hugging and this kissing was fake. What was the hugging and kissing? He wanted to see where's the money. He heard that his sister's family has some guilt. And he wanted to see, where's the money? So he kissed him to see if there's money in his mouth. He hugged him to see that. He basically did everything Shalei Lishma to see if he has any jewels or any money. So ask the Chavetz Chaim, why are we being so mean to Lavan? Maybe he really meant it. It was family. How do you know that this hugging and kissing was all Shalei Lishma? Prove it. So the Chavetz Chaim says a beautiful proof. Turn to the end of the parasha. The end of the parasha when Lavan lets the family leave. So it says over there he kisses all his grandchildren. He kisses his daughters, and he does not kiss Yaakov. Says the Chavetz Chaim, what happened? I thought Lavan's such a big kisser of his family. The answer is because he's not. He's not a big kisser of Yaakov. So why does he kiss him in the beginning of the parasha? Because he wanted to see where the money is. Therefore, says the Chavetz Chaim, that was the raya that Yaakov was absolutely not Lashma. He was completely not Lashma. Yeah, I'm sorry, Lavan was not Lashma in the hugging and the kissing, but instead, rather, everything was Shalei Lashma just to see where the money is. Okay, we'll try to get to one more thing and then we'll leave it at that. Is we all know the famous story where Yaakov gets taken, so to say, by Lavan. Lavan fools him. He gives him Leah instead of Rachel. And the mesiras nefesh of Rachel, which is unbelievable, we need to speak with him more about that, that Rachel gave the simanim to her sister. Now, when I go once a year, I go to Tag Shabbaton in the mountains with the high school, and I always, you know, bring out this point, you know. And we talked today, you know, there's a shidduch crisis. Now, I always tell the girls, put yourself in Rachel's shoes. She basically was told she's going to marry the Gadol Adar. You can imagine how excited she was, how happy she was. And then last minute, she said, you know, I can't go through with it. My sister's going to be hurt. I'm going to give my sister my spot. And Rachel thought at that time that meant she's going to lose out and get stuck with Esav. Can you imagine what Mesiras Nefesh that is? To give up the best shidduch in the world for the worst shidduch in the world? And we all would have justified it. We would have said, listen, she'll be embarrassed the first hour, and she'll get over it. I'll take her out for ice cream the next day, and I'll tell her, you understand why I did what I did. We all could have justified not doing what Rachel did. But the mesiras nefesh of what Rachel did to give all this amount to her sisters, or her sister shouldn't be embarrassed, is remarkable. But what happens? Yaakov is upset. He comes back to Lavan and he says, Lavan, what did you do? I laid it out for you. I told you, but Rachel, Bitchaktan, I laid it out. How'd you beat me? So Yaakov says, no. That's not the way we do things over here. That's not the minig over here. The minig over here is that the older girl goes before the younger girl. So the kash is, why did Yaakov take that sitting? Yaakov should sit back to him, but I laid it out for you. I told you I wanted Rachel, Bitchaktan. What are you telling me? This is not the minig. Who cares? So I saw a gevaldik pshat. Yaakov, Lava made up in his head, he's going to give Yaakov love, he's going to give Yaakov Rachel and Leah. But he said to himself, Lava was a big lamdan. Lava said to himself, the minig over here is that we marry off our older daughter to the older boy. You bought the Bechaira from your brother Esav, so now you become the older one. So if you become the older one, we got to give it to the older girl. So you're going to have to marry Leah first. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm following protocol. You'll get both. But protocol is older goes to older, and you hold Lishita Oscha, you're the oldest, because you bought the Bechayra. Lavan was a Gavalda Galant. So therefore, Lavan says, I'm sorry, I had to give you Leah first. And Taka, that's why he gave Leah first. And that was the Taina. We ran out of time. One of the lines in this week's parasha, which is very famous, and it connects to Thanksgiving, is that when Leah has her fourth son, so she says, Apa Moide Es Hashem. Now it's very catchy. It's a song now. Everyone sings it. Now I say thanks to Hashem. So I just saw today an unbelievable idea. There was a meeting of neurologists, a big gathering of neurologists where they were discussing a problem that apparently is rampant in many people, that when they get up in the morning, they faint a little bit because the blood rushes when you're laying down to when you stand up. If you get up too fast, it's not safe. So one of the neurologists suggested that everyone, when they wake up in the morning, should sit on their bed for 12 seconds, allow the blood to flow back normally, and then you get up. So there was a frum neurologist at this meeting. He got up and said, you know, it's amazing. We Jews, when we wake up in the morning, we say this thing called Maida Ani. Maida Ani has exactly 12 words. Which means that Kodesh Baruch Hu built into the Bria that before we start our morning, we sit up in our bed and we say Maida Ani. And then we start our day. Kodesh Baruch Hu knew that we need to sit up, we need to have that transition, and we start off with the thanks. That's how we start off our morning with Maidani. Very appropriate as we go into Thanksgiving tomorrow, a day that the country was Nesakim for thanks, and Hoida, we as Jews live with Hoida all the time. But this week's parasha, Hapam Oides Hashem, the idea of giving thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Maidani that we recite every single morning. Okay, we didn't get to a lot of things, but we did a little bit of the parasha. Have a wonderful Shabbos, everyone. We'll see everyone back here, Mitzvah Hashem, Sunday morning. Be well and be safe. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your days off. Enjoy all your time.